American attorney, Confederate officer, author, and 33rd degree Freemason, Albert Pike said, quote, "There is in nature one most potent force, by means whereof a single man who could possess himself of it and should know how to direct it, could revolutionize and change the face of the world." In India, such potent energy is equated with prana. Prana is a Sanskrit word for life force. In Jainism, it also means vital principle. And in Indian medicine, yoga, and martial arts, the term refers to a cosmic energy that permeates all matter. The universal principle of energy, or force, responsible for the body's life, heat, and maintenance, prana is the sum total of all energy that is manifest in the universe. While prana is the general name of the life force, the prana vayu is one of its specific functions. In Ayurveda, Tantra, and Tibetan medicine, prana vayu is the basic vayu from which all other vayus arise. The word vayu translates literally as wind or air, connoting all-pervading movement. The root va means that which flows. A vayu is a vehicle for activities and experiences within the body, or a force that moves throughout the system controlling functions such as breathing, digestion, and nerve impulses. In the human body, this universal prana has been said by ancient alchemists to move in specific ways, in specific regions of the body, regulating and controlling physical and mental function. Prana is analogous to qi or qi in China. In traditional Chinese culture, qi, or also qi, is an active principle forming part of any living thing. Qi is frequently translated as natural energy, life force, or energy flow. Qi is the central underlying principle in traditional Chinese medicine, Taoist philosophy, and martial arts. The literal translation of qi is breath or air. Some believe qi is a separate force from the physical world, while others think qi comes from physical matter. Still others, especially Chinese, Buddhists, and Taoists, hold that matter arises from qi. The quality, quantity, and balance of qi is believed to be essential to maintaining health and achieving a long life. Livia Cohn, author of Health and Long Life, The Chinese Way, explains it like this, quote, "Qi or qi is the material energy of the universe, the basic stuff of nature. It animates life and furnishes functional power of events. Qi is the root of the human body. Its quality and movement determine human health. There's a normal or healthy amount of qi in every person, and health manifests in its balance and harmony, moderation, and smoothness of flow." Breath control is considered especially fundamental to balancing the levels of qi in one's body. Controlled and meditative breathing allows qi to permeate the entire body by imagining the breath as a visible, universal force or current moving through the body. In Japan, this universal force is called Reiki and is usually discussed in the context of stress reduction, relaxation, and especially with healing. It's administered by laying on hands, and is based on the idea that an unseen life force energy flows through all beings and is what causes us to be alive. The word Reiki is made up of two Japanese words, Rei, which means God's wisdom or the higher power, and Ki, which is life force energy. So Reiki is actually spiritually guided life force energy. Vril is another name of this life force energy that theoretically fills the universe and all living beings. Helena Blavatsky, the foundress of the Theosophical Society, described this Vril energy as an ether stream that could be transformed into a physical force. The Vril Society was a secret organization in Germany devoted to mastering and harnessing this unseen force of nature. They accumulated and combined the guarded alchemical knowledge of this life force contained in Sufism, Aryan Hindu mysticism, theosophy, Nordic and Sumerian mythology, pagan sex magic, channeled material, and the Kabbalah. According to esoteric and yoga teachings, sexual energy can be channeled upward to develop our energy centers or chakra system and higher or subtle energy bodies. Tantra and Kundalini yoga were two ancient Aryan techniques utilized by the Vril Society to harness this sexual energy. Tantra and ritualized male-female interaction and Kundalini yoga in strict individual practice were methods that involved semen retention. In the book Morning of the Magicians, author Jacques Bergier and Louis Powell said, quote, "This secret society was founded literally on Bueller Lytton's novel The Coming Race. The book describes a race of men psychically far in advance of our own. They have acquired powers over themselves and over things that made them almost godlike. For the moment they are in hiding, they are said to live deep within the earth. Soon they will emerge to reign over us." Of course, the majority of people that have heard of Vril, or subterranean civilizations that utilize bioelectromagnetic energy, scoff at it and denounce it as fiction. That said, in my humble opinion, almost everything taught after World War II, whether it pertains to energy and physics or to anthropology, is nothing but watered down, politically motivated propaganda and social engineering, with anything of real value either censored or cleverly disguised with cute animals, scenic beauty, and ukulele music. That said, German National Socialist occult research also extended into the investigation of paranormal and metaphysical phenomena. They were interested in unlocking the full human potential, which included psychic abilities and the detection and manipulation of etheric energies. Much of this research has been kept from the public after World War II and transferred into black ops projects run by organizations such as the CIA. There were some scientists, however, that managed to study and publish their findings independently. Dr. William Reich was an Austrian-born psychoanalyst, noted historically for his work in psychiatry. He said he wanted to attack the neurosis by prevention rather than treatment. However, Dr. Reich's greatest scientific contributions involved his work in biophysics, which has been almost totally erased from history. From the 1930s, he became an increasingly controversial figure. From 1932 until his death, all of his work was self-published. The controversy began when Dr. Reich began noticing an energetic connection that all living beings held in common. He called this mysterious force Oregon energy, or Oregon radiation, derived from orgasm and organism and the study of orgonomy. Dr. Reich worked tirelessly for the next 40 years, demonstrating its laws and studying its various manifestations. He published a series of papers on the idea of orgastic potency, the ability to release the emotions from the muscles and lose the self in an uninhibited orgasm. He argued that psychic health and the ability to love depended on orgastic potency. He attempted to ground his orgasm theory in biology, exploring whether the libido, in fact, represented electricity or a chemical substance. Though one cannot see or smell it, his sensitive equipment could measure it. Dr. Reich bought an oscillograph and attached it to friends and students who volunteered to arouse each other while Reich read the tracings. He first said that he had discovered a life force or cosmic energy, an extension of Freud's idea of the libido, in New York in 1939. After Reich had demonstrated the properties of orgone energy to Albert Einstein, the famous physicist exclaimed that, quote, "This would be a bombshell to physics." In 1933, Dr. Reich detailed a biological basis for neurosis in his book, Character Analysis, and provided an outline of his research which would lead him to the discovery of this Vril-like cosmic energy. Experiments involving microorganisms and airborne infection opened the door to his experiments concerning radiation particles that he later called orgone.
It is April 3rd, 1952. I, Wilhelm Reich, I happen to discover the life energy. I know what it means for the future development of medicine, biology, philosophy, and natural science. I'm fully aware of it. And in this awareness, I am completely alone. There's nobody here to listen to what I'm saying. The recording apparatus is the only witness. I hope that someone will, at some time in the future, listen to this recording with great respect for the courage that was necessary to sustain the research work in orgone energy and life energy all through these years.
It would appear that this seemingly high-frequency, ether-like energy may simply be an unrecognized form of bioelectromagnetism, a universal energy that the ancient Chinese culture called qi, the Japanese referred to as ki, the Sanskrit word for the same concept is prana, and ka is the Egyptian word for it. The ka was the ancient Egyptian concept of vital essence, which distinguishes the differences between the living and the dead, with death occurring when the ka leaves the body. And this resembles the concept of spirit in other religions. The Ankh is an ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic ideograph symbolizing life, and in some esoteric circles, Ankhing is a term given to the occult practice of directly working with this universal energy. In ancient Egypt, it was believed that the orgasm was the key to eternal life, and that vital life force was dissipated and lost with ejaculation. This is the true reason behind circumcision and vows of celibacy in the context of semen retention. Also, the cornerstone of Taoist and Tibetan Tantra, where an initiate learns to control the orgasm and therefore the flow of their sexual energy up instead of out. They believe that if this energy is controlled, the human orgasm becomes a source of infinite pranic or Vril energy that is not lost. Vril is the term used by the German Vril Society, which was formed well before World War II and dedicated to the study and practice of metaphysics, covertly conducting research into psychic phenomenon and this universal energy. Their secret society members, which included some who would later become notable members of the Nazi Party, were said to have allegedly ended up in Antarctica by the end of World War II. Nationalist German research into esoteric occult practices had deep ties to the original cultures of Asia, who, according to German archaeologists, stem from the same ancient Aryan traditions that belonged to their own ancestors that migrated into Europe millennia ago. One specific area of interest to the Germans of the early 20th century was Tibet, which today is a suppressed nation subjugated by Chinese communism, but in antiquity had a spiritual tradition that was disseminated to three quarters of Asia. Dao is a Chinese word signifying path, road, or way. In the context of East Asian philosophy and religion, the Dao is not a name for a thing, but the underlying natural order of the universe. It cannot be grasped as a concept and is therefore eternally nameless. In Taoism, the object of spiritual practice is to harmonize one's will with nature, or become one with the Tao. This involves meditative and moral practices in order to achieve effortless action.
I remember once I was looking in the open air, and one of those glorious little thistle down things came, and I picked it up like that and brought it down, and it looked as if it was struggling to get away, just as if you caught an insect by one leg, like a daddy long legs or something of that kind. It seemed to be struggling to get away, and I thought, well, it's not doing that. That's just the wind blowing. But then I thought again, really? Only the wind blowing? Surely it is the structure of this thing which, in cooperation with the existence of wind, enables it to move like an animal, but using the wind's effort, not its own. It is more intelligent being than an insect, in a way, because an insect uses effort, like a person who rows a boat uses effort, but the man who puts up a sail is using magic. He lets nature do it for him with the intelligence to use a sail, you see? Now that is the most highly skillful art of all. That is Taoism in perfection.
A central tenet in most varieties of Taoism is that the Tao is ever-present, but must be manifested, cultivated, and or perfected in order to be realized. There is no exterior deity to be worshipped. While much of these Eastern esoteric practices may sound unfamiliar and foreign to people that subscribe to Abrahamic faiths, that's only because Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are veiled in symbolism which effectively hides the occult or hidden knowledge from the general public or uninitiated. In fact, modern versions of these religions have vilified and demonized the very symbols which in antiquity represented spiritual rebirth and enlightenment, particularly the serpent. Hidden behind every major religion and tradition hides an esoteric secret, and throughout history, only an elect few were initiated into the mysteries of this truth, as it became completely forbidden to reveal the secrets of this mystery to the public. Since ancient times, the symbolic worship of the serpent has been seen in cultures worldwide, and it is often given a similar meaning, generally accepted as a symbol of divine wisdom and spiritual purity. In Gnosticism, the serpent represents eternity of the soul, where in the Gnostic text Pistis Sophia, it describes the disk of the sun as a 12-part dragon with his tail in his mouth. Helena Blavatsky says that serpent worship was spread across the globe by the quote, masters of wisdom, and that all initiates into the sacred mysteries are called Nagas, or serpents of wisdom, end quote. Alexander the Great, before he had become the son of Jupiter Amun, was said to be the son of a serpent. And Augustus Caesar's mother, Atia, in legend, had Augustus from a serpent. I can't help but be reminded of the Tree of Knowledge, and of course, the serpent that tempted Adam and Eve with the forbidden fruit. In mythology, folklore, and religion, a trickster is a god, goddess, demigod, spirit, or sometimes even an animal, which exhibits a great degree of wisdom, occult, or secret knowledge, and uses it or plays tricks or otherwise disobeys normal rules and conventional behavior. These archetypal characters appear in the myths of many different cultures around the world. And I'll go ahead and take a chance and say every single culture, as the mystery behind this boundary crosser actually stems from a forgotten time in prehistory and was passed down from an ancient global civilization from which we all share various degrees of ancestry with. In Greek mythology, Prometheus is a titan and is also a trickster. He's what's known as a cultural hero, and in the context of mythology, a hero is defined as a character who changes the world through invention or discovery, or who contributes to the creation of civilization itself. A typical cultural hero might be credited with the discovery of agriculture, music, or in the case of Prometheus, fire. This archetype is mirrored in many Native American mythologies and beliefs, where the coyote spirit stole fire from the gods and gave it to mankind. So the first point I want to make is the act of stealing in this context is beneficial to mankind. The second point I want to make is that fire in the occult and mystery schools does not mean the heat generated when you strike a match, but another type of fire that is associated with internal alchemy. Natives from the southeastern United States replaced the coyote with a rabbit hero, and Pacific Northwest Native stories often feature a raven in this role, where the raven steals fire from his uncle the beaver and eventually gives it to humans. Again, I want to stress that despite what is taught in schools, if it's even taught at all, the context is not about how Homo erectus got fire and learned how to cook with it. We're talking about the fire that ignites the soul, that inspires fine art, that influences music, that's the trigger of new inventions, or the divine spark of creativity that's associated with problem solving. So, as with all religions, these myths should not be taken literally, but one must understand the underlying symbols. Fire is not just the flame, but the light that illuminates. And I'll come back to this a little later. In Norse and Germanic mythology, the god Odin steals the mead of poetry and is credited with the discovery of the runes. The poetic mead is a mythical beverage that's equated with divine inspiration, and whoever drinks it becomes a scholar, able to recite any information and so wise that there are no questions that he cannot answer. In a literal sense, mead is an alcoholic beverage created by fermenting honey with water, sometimes with various fruits, spices, grains, or hops. The alcoholic content ranges from 3.5% to more than 20%. But in the legend, Kvasir is a very wise god that traveled around teaching and spreading knowledge until some dwarves killed him and drained his blood, mixing it with honey, which resulted in the mead of poetry, imbuing whoever drinks it with wisdom, leading to the introduction of poetry to mankind. Now, I hesitate to tell the story of how Odin stole the mead because of potential censorship issues, but let's just say that the precious liquid leaked from another god's rear end, and Odin gave it to those truly gifted in poetry. In the biblical context, the snake in the Garden of Eden story plays the role of the trickster. In Hebrew, the word nekash is used to identify the serpent that appears in Genesis, who is portrayed as a deceptive creature or trickster who cunningly promotes as good what God had forbidden. So keep in mind that the Bible was not written in English. It was translated and retranslated several times before it made it to English. So nekash is the serpent, the dragon, and Lucifer, or light-bearer. So this can be taken the same way that Prometheus was also a light-bearer, or light-bringer, as Prometheus, from the view of mankind, was the good guy who stole the fire and gave it to man, and for this was punished by Zeus for his defiance against the gods. In Jewish mysticism, we have something called the Zohar, meaning radiance, and is the foundational work of the Kabbalah, which is at the core of many, if not all, secret societies, including those of pre-World War II Germany, including the Vril Society. The teachings include commentary of the mystical aspects of the Torah, which is the first part of the Bible, called the Old Testament, where we find Genesis and the Garden of Eden story. The Zohar contains scriptural interpretations specifically to do with the serpent, or the Lucifer character, which are left out of modern versions of the Bible. The word Lucifer, the light bringer, appears only once in the King James Version and is also a Latin name for the planet Venus, sometimes referred to as morning star, as it sometimes rises in the morning a few hours before the sun. In Isaiah, it says, quote, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning?" Because of this one sentence, Lucifer has become equated with Satan, the devil, and the prince of darkness, which is actually pretty ironic if you think about it. So what does the light-bearing serpent tell Eve in the garden that has been left out of most mainstream renditions of ancient scripture? We are at about the halfway point in this presentation. For those that are interested in seeing the expanded version, you can find it on my Patreon page. There should be a link in the description. Thank you for supporting my work. I appreciate it very much. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.